Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Now that hospitals are filling up again due to the Delta variant of COVID-19, many who have been hospitalized or visited a doctor's office after putting off routine care for more than a year have had the opportunity to consider what hangs on the walls of those hospitals and medical facilities. Should there be pastoral scenes which purportedly soothe the ailing? Should hospital art avoid abstraction so as not to make an ill patient tax their mind to consciously or subconsciously interpret it? One argument cited by my guest today is that hospital art should vary based on location and its intent. There could be, for example, art for empathy, art for inspiration and hope, or art for transcendence, to name a few. Interestingly, the whole field of hospital aesthetics, such as it is frequently traced back to a single research study conducted in one suburban Pennsylvania hospital between 1972 and 1981 that only looked at so-called outcomes in 46 patients. Yet this one underpowered article is an outsized point of departure for the whole field. My guest today, Lou Stoppard, is a London-based writer and curator whose latest piece at NewYorker.com asks, "What should hang on the walls of a hospital?" Stoppard's writing has appeared in numerous publications. In addition to The New Yorker, she's written for GQ, Aperture, Vogue, as well as The New York Times and Financial Times. Writer and curator Lou Stoppard is my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Lou Stoppard, welcome to Medical Monday. I'd like to start by just having you tell us what you've learned in researching this piece about art in healthcare. It seems there are several schools of thought, as I guess there are schools of art, but what do some folks think is the best type of artwork for patient-centered venues? I mean, some say, well, pastoral scenes, others say abstract.
Yeah, exactly. There is this divide in terms of what is the best form of art to have displayed in medical settings. And I think that is the biggest thing that I learned when researching this piece was that split. I mean, a researcher who I spoke to, who actually isn't quoted in the piece, but was incredibly helpful, when I was researching for it, she equated that split between the nature camp, as she called it, and the sort of abstract advocates, people who believe in sort of gallery quality artwork. She equated that split to the divides that we see elsewhere in modern life, particularly in the sort of political realm. And I thought that was really interesting, the idea that this is a really sort of quite strong point of contention, that this is a real conflict within research and thinking. It does seem that there is a general acceptance now that some form of kind of visual care, visual intrigue is something that is relevant within healthcare environments. So design is important, sort of artistic elements within a healthcare setting are important. That seems to be something that is now accepted. That's not to say that there's a lot more work that could be done. You know, I think there's a lot that could be pushed in those areas. But the divide really comes, as you articulated, in terms of, you know, what is it that patients should be looking at? People accept that there should be pictures, that there should be canvases, that there should be murals, whatever. But the point of contention, and it really is a point of contention, the point of conflict, is about, you know, what should be pictured within those things.
So you have an interesting hook for this article. Can you share that with us? I mean, is that the actual thing that inspired you to write it? Was in the middle of the pandemic, you had a doctor's appointment yourself and it got you to thinking?
Well, yes and no. So that scene from Ben Lerner's 1004 that I begin the piece with is really, really relevant to the piece. And he spends a lot of time in and out of healthcare settings within the protagonist of that novel. I say he because obviously Ben Lerner is someone who we associate with autofiction. But his character, his protagonist, spends a lot of time in and out of hospitals and healthcare settings. And there's this great scene, it's a very funny but poignant scene within the book, where he scans the setting of the hospital that he's within, and he points to sort of, I think he puts it like a poster of Picasso's Dove, and he references, you know, watercolors of Manhattan sunsets, he talks about photographs of orchids, and he gets quite irritable by the art that he sees on display, and he says, "I understand the desire to have some decorations that indicate this isn't just a hospital room, that a patient isn't just a pathologized body." And then he goes on to say, "It nods blandly to established cultural modes, the medium of painting, and the cliched instance of it. They are images of art, not art." And it is a scene that I did think about when I was in a hospital setting during the pandemic, not because of the coronavirus, thankfully, and just for a sort of routine checkup. But I looked at a sort of floral poster that was in within the space, and it really made me recall that scene, and it got me thinking about the topic. to be really honest, the topic was something that I was already researching anyway. Actually, pre-pandemic, I'd spent some time reporting on hospital rooms, who are the charitable organization who come up later in the piece, who spend time transforming mental health wards with the help of different artists. And I'd been reporting on their work for The New Yorker. And then the piece really actually changed quite dramatically, because what went from being quite a sort of specific piece looking at this one interesting organization just totally changed because of the pandemic. You know, it was a time where everyone was thinking a lot more about healthcare and also simultaneously a lot more about space and interiors. And lockdown led a lot of people to question and discuss and debate, you know, what the settings that we contain ourselves within should look like, you know, whether that is our homes and the places that a lot of people were living through lockdowns, or also, you know, healthcare environments, prisons, schools. You know, we spent a lot of time thinking about the settings that people were locked down in and what they should look like and the effect, whether on our mental health or our physical well-being, of those spaces. And I think people really began to debate and question this idea, which is an idea that comes up later within the piece, about, you know, what is a healthcare setting, and actually, how do we think about health beyond hospitals? And that was what was really interesting with the pandemic, is it's something that played out across the world, across cities, across our homes. And I think it made people think about healthcare beyond the medical. So the piece really expanded out sort of after the pandemic hit. And I did a lot more and a lot sort of a wider set of reporting. And the piece turned into the piece that you see now. But yes, that Ben Lerner scene, sorry, this is a really long answer to your question, but that Ben Lerner scene was really important. But it's perhaps not entirely fair to say that it was a complete starting point for the article, but it was definitely a kind of funny coincidence. It wasn't part of my reporting. It was just me going in for a routine checkup, and then it felt very amusing and kind of ironic that actually that experience repeated back at me some of the things that I'd come across in my research, which was this kind of banal, inoffensive artwork that you often see within hospitals. And then that was something that I really did experience firsthand.
So yeah, the name, that novel you're referencing is by Ben Lerner, and it's called 1004. That's the name of the novel. Yeah. You you were at a, you know, mid-pandemic, you said a routine appointment, and I guess gynecology appointment, so sort of staring at the ceiling or what have you, or the wall, and it was tulips, which I think is funny because you reference back to including the tulips at my gynecology appointment. But so this was what was so fascinating to me about this article, was like sort of the level of research you did. And I mean, I've worked in healthcare settings pretty much my entire career, and I guess I have given thought to the posters on the wall on occasion, but very seldom have I ever thought, you know, was there a cohesive strategy or what was the therapeutic aspiration behind it? And so you trace back this work to, I guess it's Roger Ulrich, who did a small study in suburban Pennsylvania in the 1970s, and that his research is still cited to this day. Tell us about what you found in that article and how that may have come about.
Well, the study that you referenced there, it is a really, really interesting study. It took place between 1972 and 1981. And Roger Ulrich, he was looking at the effects of nature on patients and on healing. And he assigned different patients to different rooms, some of which had windows that looked out onto trees, basically a small row of trees. And then other patients, I think it was 23 patients could see this kind of green vision of the trees. 23 other patients had rooms that faced out onto brick walls. And what they found is that the patients who had this view of nature recovered better. So they had shorter hospital stays, their medication levels were lower. Even things like the nurses gave them more sort of upbeat reports in terms of how they were doing, in terms of their sort of mental state. And this study is really, really relevant. And I think it is widely accepted that if people have views onto nature, if there's a presence of nature, that can lead to sort of feelings of hope, of optimism. But what's really fascinating to me is how this one study just cropped up constantly. And it was cited basically in, I would say, at least half of the interviews that I did for this piece, including ones that haven't actually made it into the final article. It was cited in so many books that I looked at on the topic, in so many papers about art in healthcare settings. And I guess my first reaction to that was that this isn't a study about art. And that was what really surprised me, with how sort of visible it was within the way that we still talk about hospital design today, is how hospital strategies or some researchers are conflating windows, nature's views onto trees, with art. And those are two very different things. And I think that's what takes us back to that Ben Lerner point, where he talks about these images of art, not art. it made me realize that people weren't thinking about art as its own thing. They weren't thinking about the myriad different roles that art can play. They were thinking purely in terms of content and in terms of sort of like a window to look through. And they saw a canvas or a poster or a print as basically being the same thing as a window. So sort of how can it distract or divert the patient? How can it maybe make them think a little bit less about the pain that they might be in? How can it soothe them? And people were really approaching art from that perspective, from a perspective of distraction, rather than from a perspective of looking at the sort of broader, more nuanced, more complex roles that art can play. And that's what some of the researchers who I spoke to who really advocate for broader concepts of art within healthcare were pushing towards. They were saying, you know, hey, like, sure, medication levels, these are easy to measure, but what about wonder? What about optimism? What about, you know, a sense of one's future, a sense of self? And they were trying to sort of move art away from this sort of nature center, which had just really seemed to constrain the way that art was seen within hospitals. And that's not to say that a lot of those researchers didn't also think that, you know, nature scenes could be relevant within hospital environments. It was just, I think, that they felt as if art had maybe got stuck. And I think the repetition of that study, to me, kind of illustrated their point. It was that everything sort of came back to this one, you know, really small study. You know, it was two sets of 23 patients. It wasn't a sort of, you know, enormous sweeping study. And it was fascinating to me how our ideas about the aesthetics of hospitals can, so it's slightly like urban myths that get passed down and down and down, and how popular this study continued to be made me question, you know, how much other thinking around hospital art has come from sort of quite small pieces of research or, you know, quite specific ideas that get repeated and built on and built on until you have everyone kind of operating around a set of norms that haven't really been tested or stretched. And so that's why I found that study so fascinating. The repetition of that study was also fascinating.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Lou Stoppard, a writer and art curator who lives in the UK, who has written a really lovely piece in the New Yorker, newyorker.com, titled What Should Hang on the Walls of a Hospital, where she has been thinking very deeply about how art can inform, can heal, and especially, as you point out, Lou, during the pandemic, people, this has given a lot of time for many of us to reflect or convalesce, as the case may be, and to think about how art can impact health. And so you have a concept here somewhere in the middle of the piece that I think bears further explanation that you call, or actually I think one of your interviewees calls, hygiene theater. I was wondering if you could unpack that phrase for us a little bit, hygiene theater, and how that has a huge impact on healthcare settings.
Yeah, so hygiene theater, that's something that's referenced by Sarah Jensen Carr, who is a professor of architecture and an architect who I quote within the piece. And her research is really, really interesting because she talks about the cliches that exist around healthy environments. And she talks about how so much of our idea of health comes around this, she calls it the aesthetic of clean. And I mean, this is me paraphrasing her here, but I think what she's talking about with that is this kind of wipe clean, sanitized, muted colors, the kind of aesthetic that we associate with a hospital where there isn't anything vibrant, everything feels very polished, very stiff, very smooth. I think the point that is so interesting with that hygiene theater that she refers to is this idea that it lulls us into a sort of false sense of what health is and what healthy environments are. And it also creates a false sense of what most health issues are at the moment, because it really equates healthiness with sort of germ control. When actually, if you think sort of beyond, I mean, we're in a strange moment for health at the moment, obviously, because of the pandemic. But if you think in normal times, so much of our health issues are chronic. They're not issues that are caused by germs. They're not viral issues. They're chronic conditions. So issues around obesity, issues around the environment that we live in, pollution, these kind of things. You know, actually thinking about infectious diseases is not necessarily always the most helpful. And I think what she's trying to sort of articulate within those points is that we need to think about healthy spaces in a much broader way. It's not good to have this divide between hospitals, you know, clean, sterile, and the rest of the world, you know, messy, vibrant, alive. Actually, we need to think about our health more broadly, because most sort of health issues don't play out in treatment rooms. They don't play out in hospital rooms where everything can be wiped down. They play out in our homes, or they play out in our cities, or in rural environments, in the places that we live. And I think hygiene theatre is something that we saw a lot of within the pandemic. You know, even after we realized this was largely transmitted by sort of, it was an airborne virus, you still saw that obsession with wiping things down and washing hands. And I understand that, you know, washing hands is a good thing to do. And I understand this desire to sanitize, to wipe. You know, I understand it mentally. It's something that makes sense. It's a way of trying to exert control over something that feels very scary. But I think that this muted kind of sterility that we associate with hospitals potentially doesn't accurately help people think about the way that most diseases operate. And I think this idea that hospitals cannot be vibrant spaces and that there cannot be a synergy between the outside world and a hospital environment isn't maybe helpful. We do need to break down the barriers between healthcare environments and the rest of the world. I think to do that will hopefully help people think more pragmatically and more honestly about the chronic nature of a lot of the diseases that we live in, and hopefully push us into making the spaces that we live in and occupy healthier as well. So that's something that was a really interesting point to me when researching this piece. And I think it's a way in which the pandemic definitely sort of pushed and morphed this piece, because I do think this is a moment where we have been thinking about healthcare sort of completely beyond the medical. And that's been a really important sort of step forward in thinking.
Yeah, so one of the people you cite was Angelica Theriot, who had this awful experience in the late 1970s in a San Francisco hospital. And so she wound up establishing what's called the plane tree model of patient-centered care. And I work in healthcare settings where we talk about patient-centered care all the time. And I guess I'd never thought back to sort of the genesis of that. But can you expand on what the plane tree model of patient-centered care is and how it informs hospital design and treatment plans?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really interesting also, you know, she was in hospital in the mid to late 70s. And I think it's worth stating, you know, that was around the time that people did start thinking about, you know, design and aesthetics when it comes to hospitals. I think it is interesting to me how late that conversation started happening. You know, you did have sort of pioneers before that. So like there's some quotes within the piece from Florence Nightingale who does reference kind of art and aesthetics in her notes on nursing. But up until the 70s and 80s, you don't really get sort of great research interest hospital aesthetics in sort of design in the way that they can affect patients. So what you get with the plane tree model is really fascinating and really pioneering. And a lot of it is stuff that seems probably really obvious to a layperson, which is that hospitals can be oppressive, difficult, traumatic places to be in. And the plane tree model pushed for patient-centered, as you put it, care. And a lot of that revolved around things to do with design. So whether that was sort of pushing for ideas of how the space could feel less stark, less lonely. So some of that was around lighting. So there was a really nice push towards things like dimmer switches, just so the hospital could feel less, you know, like the strip lights that you really associate with medical environments, that would feel less oppressive in that way. There are experiments in terms of installing pianos in the front lobbies of hospitals, so you heard things that weren't just sort of buzzers and then those medical sounds. And I came across various different examples within the research. I don't want to misremember anything, but I'm pretty sure that there was a really nice example of them trying to install bakeries in some hospitals. You would smell something other than the kind of sick person smell that we associate with hospitals. So, I mean, really, really fascinating stuff. And Plane Tree have advised many, many different, you know, hospitals, many different researchers. They've advised until quite recently the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. So Plane Tree are really pioneering and interesting organization. And they've been going for a long time now, so they've obviously had a huge impact. But I think it is interesting to think about art in terms of that sort of patient-centered care, because a lot of it is about sort of trying to create a sense of humanity around the medical experience, create a sense of something that feels less, altogether less difficult than being in hospital can often feel. Plane Tree was really a sort of point that I kept coming back to within researching this piece, because it did feel like that was such a pioneering model.
Yeah, it's things like dimmer switches, it really does go a long way. But I had no idea of its breadth and how, you know, when something impacts the Department of Veterans Affairs or Veterans Administration hospitals in the U.S., you know it has achieved some level of mainstream penetration. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. And we're talking with Lou Stoppard, who is a writer, journalist, and art curator in the UK. She's written a wonderful piece in The New Yorker for their culture desk. It's actually, you can see it for free at newyorker.com. It's titled, What Should Hang on the Walls of a Hospital? And we're talking about how art impacts health, healthcare, and about art in hospital or healthcare settings. And it's actually just quite fascinating. I wanted, Lou, to shift gears here to sort of the back end of the piece, where you take us on a tour, if you will, of the Hellingly Center. And I was wondering if you could share with us kind of what the Hellingly Center is and what, you know, you were sort of brought there by this project, I think, or charity called Hospital Rooms. That's what it's called. That's the proper name for it. What is Hospital Rooms and what did you find at the Hellingly Center?
Hospital Rooms is an organization that works specifically within mental health wards. And they commission different artists, and you know, really sort of often very famous, very acclaimed artists, you know, Turner Prize-winning artists, to come in and transform these spaces. And because of the fact that these are mental health wards, often they're spaces that have a lot of sort of health and safety requirements. They're spaces where the artists often have to really work on site, have to really consider how each work can be shaped, particularly around the setting it's going to be in. And often artists will end up painting directly onto the walls. There's a lot of requirements around sort of making sure that things are durable or that they couldn't harm any of the patients. So, you know, avoiding things like ligature points or anything that could be sort of removed or damaged in any way. So Hospital Rooms were a charity that I've really sort of been fascinated by their work and have followed for a while. And within this sort of more general piece that I was writing about art within healthcare settings, they seemed like a really nice case study to focus on, in a way of sort of showing how this issue can be thought about differently and how it can maybe be thought about with a great deal of care and consideration, which is really what hospital rooms do. So part of what I did when I was sort of researching into their work was to spend some time in one of the wards and one of the units that they were working on. And so I spent some time in, as you said, the Hellingly Center, which is a space that is for patients who have had interactions with the criminal justice system. So some of those patients will have been convicted of crime, others will be there awaiting sort of stages of their legal proceedings. Other times patients have been transferred there from other facilities, so that could be, the Hellingly Center is a medium secure facility. Some patients have been transferred from more secure facilities, so high secure facilities. Others have come straight from prison if they're having issues with their mental health. They might come out of the sort of the mainstream prison system into the Hellingly. So I spent some time there and looking at the artworks that Hospital Rooms had installed, which were absolutely sort of beautiful. It did feel like I was walking around this incredibly exclusive, you know, incredibly beautiful museum, which is not something that you necessarily would think you would feel when you're going into a medium secure mental health facility. And I spent some time chatting with the patients and talking to them about their experiences of the art and how it made them feel. And I mean, it was a really amazing thing to have done. And it was a real privilege to spend time with Tim and Neve, who started Hospital Rooms, but also with the patients. And it did confront a lot of my own ideas around health and visual sort of identities of spaces for people who are incarcerated, and it just confronted a lot of my stigmas around sort of mental health. And it was a real privilege to spend the day there. And it made me feel quite sort of surprised at how I felt being in that space, because I left feeling like it was a very optimistic space, which is not something that I think I envisaged feeling. And I felt the patient's optimism, and I saw how that had been so activated by the art and so sort of empowered by the art. The fact that a lot of the patients would talk to me about their hopes and their aspirations, I sensed that they, and a lot of this was down to the work of the staff that worked there, and they were a really incredible sort of team of nurses and healthcare workers, but it really sort of hammered home the point to me that one of the functions of art within a healthcare setting is to give people a sense of a future, give people a sense of, you know, what comes beyond this hospital stay. And I saw how important it can be for art to serve as a link to the outside world. And that's something that I think applies whatever type of hospital setting, you know, whether it's a mental health ward, whether it's a hospital in a sort of bustling city that's dealing with all kinds of medical issues. I really realized that art can be a link between your hospital stay and life beyond your hospital stay. And I saw that so much from the patients, and the way that art had just given them a sense of their identity. I mean, I actually spoke to some patients who were in other facilities that hospital rooms had worked on. And I didn't end up using all of the interviews just, you know, for space. When you're writing these pieces, you always, well, I always end up with far too much material than I can put in. But I spoke to a woman who was in a mother and baby unit. So she'd been admitted to this unit perhaps that she had postnatal psychosis. So this wasn't a unit that she was in because of sort of, you know, interactions with the criminal justice system. It was a unit that she found herself in because she'd been struggling mentally sort of after the birth of her child. And she was actually a healthcare worker. She was a nurse. And she talked about the role that the art gave her in building her sense of self back. And she talked about how it seems really obvious that the fact that people would ask her, what do you think of this artwork? You know, do you like it? And that sort of everyday chit-chat, it made her realize that she was worthy of having opinions, that she had something to say, that people were interested by her response to something. And she talked about how that really helped build her back up. And that was a really fascinating thing to me. And I did see that reflected in some of the interviews with the patients who were incarcerated within the Hellinglife Centre, because they had similar sort of points to make to me. They talked about how it gave them a sense that they mattered. It gave them a sense that these amazing artists wanted to come and create work for their faith. It gave them a sense that they weren't sort of forgotten, that they weren't sort of the lowest of the low, which I think is how society often treats people in their position. So it was a really fascinating experience to me. And it really helped me sort of see the myriad functions that art can have, and way beyond the ones that you would expect. And how nuanced the role of art can be within healthcare settings.
Well, every once in a while you read a piece that really sort of stops you in your tracks and makes you really think about what it is you do every day and how something that your brain has tuned out to, you know, as part of the so-called background, and makes you really stop and think. And that's what your piece did for me, which is why I really wanted to talk to you. So the name of the piece is What Should Hang on the Walls of a Hospital? The subtitle, Patient Advocates Agree on the Palliative Effects of Art, but They Differ on What Art Should Look Like. And my guest today, Lou Stoppard, who's a writer and curator in London, has examined this in some great detail, but it's a very, very lovely and readable piece that you can look at now on newyorker.com. Lou Stoppard, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, no, thank you so much for having me. It was so nice to talk to you. And I really enjoyed writing the piece, so it's so nice to know that people enjoyed reading it. It's so great when you get to write something for a title like The New Yorker, because they are so sort of open to pieces like this that get to really sort of explore a topic in depth. So I'm really glad that you responded so well to the piece.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. Lou Stoppard is a writer and curator based in London. Her new piece is called What Should Hang on the Walls of a Hospital, and you can find it for free at newyorker.com. Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening, and please stay safe out there.